Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey, it's Chaz Mostert here, and yes, I'm inside your speaker. I'm in here because I have a special message for you from Clayton in Melbourne. If you're a club, state, or national racer on the circuit or on the dirt in Speedway or rallying, you can now tap into the know-how of Walkinshaw Racing Services, and you don't need a supercar to get in the door. The same expertise that's won multiple Bathurst 1000s and V8 Supercar Championships is now available for you to call upon. From bonnet to bumper, WRS can help you with engines, design, paint, machining, fabrication, and so much more for all sorts of makes, models, and categories. Have a chat with Walkinshaw Racing Services and tell them what matters to you. Call now on 1300 W Racing or email services@walkinshawracing.com.au.
A Motorsport Podcast Network production.
G'day race fans, welcome to the Motorsport News Podcast. I'm your host Will Dale, and here's what's making headlines this week. Rumours continue about the potential sale of Erebus Motorsport. Neither Betty Klemenko nor the team have made any statements confirming that the team's on the market, but talk has continued this week. The latest is that Aaron Hickman, the CEO and founder of Velo, the Adelaide 500 and Walkinshaw Andretti United sponsor, is part of a consortium that is putting together a bid to buy the championship-winning squad. Will Brown is set to become the latest supercar star to have a go at NASCAR. He's been linked with a drive at the Sonoma Road Course round next month aboard an extra Richard Childress Racing Chevrolet Camaro. It's believed he'll have backing from Peter Adderton's Mobile X brand, which backed Brody Kostecki's Cup Series debut in the number 33 RCR car at Indianapolis last year. We're right in the middle of the four-week gap between supercars rounds, but teams haven't been idle. Walkinshaw Andretti United will be at Winton on Wednesday with primary drivers Chaz Mostert and Ryan Wood and Enduro co-drivers Lee Holdsworth and Fabian Coulthard in action for a test day. While last week Grove Racing was out at Winton using up a rookie test day for Matt Payne, while a host of Dunlop Series squads were also at the track. Meantime, there's been a big shuffle at Premier Newlon Racing. The team has parted ways with Mirko De Rosa, who joined the team this year to engineer Tim Slade. De Rosa worked the role remotely from Melbourne while the team is based on the Gold Coast, while data engineer Julia McGarry has also been released. Slade will be engineered by Ludo Lacroix at the next Supercars round at Wanneroo. Some sad news this week with the passing of Australian Grand Prix winner John Walker. The South Australian was one of our top Formula 5000 racers in the 1970s and took his sole AGP win in 1979, the year the race was held at Wanneroo. He also dabbled in touring cars, including a brief stint as the second driver at the Holden dealer team in the mid-70s, and he made four starts in the Bathurst 1000. Walker was 79, and we extend our condolences to his family. Overseas now, and Lando Norris is finally a Formula 1 Grand Prix winner. The McLaren racer took full advantage of a well-timed safety car to jump Max Verstappen midway through the Miami Grand Prix, then drove away from the world championship leader to post his first career win. The 24-year-old is the 114th driver in the history of Formula 1 to win a Grand Prix, and it was a long wait, the win coming in his 110th Grand Prix start. Ferrari's Charles Leclerc rounded out the podium. It was a sour afternoon for the Aussies, though. Oscar Piastri looked poised for fourth place until contact from Carlos Sainz broke his front wing. An unscheduled stop to replace it, leaving him 13th and two spots ahead of Daniel Ricciardo, who wasn't able to recover from being bundled out of qualifying in Q1 due to a dud set of tyres. Ricciardo had a much better time in the sprint race a day earlier, though, qualifying and finishing in fourth place. MotoGP has outlined the tech specs for its next generation of bikes. The major overhaul includes the engines dropping from 1,000cc to 850, reduced weight and fuel tank capacity, further restrictions on wings and aero, and the banning of hole shot devices. 100% sustainable fuel will also be used. The rules will come into effect for the 2027 season. Team Penske's pain over its illegal use of push-to-pass may not be over. Trackside Online is reporting that the team is poised to hand down internal punishments over the scandal, which saw Joseph Newgarden and Scott McLaughlin both disqualified from first and third places in the Grand Prix of St. Petersburg. The punishments are expected to be in the form of team members copping multi-round suspensions from upcoming IndyCar events. In NASCAR, and the Cup Series had a record-breaking finish in Kansas. Kyle Larson and Chris Buescher took the checkered flag side-by-side after banging fenders on the run to the line. The timing system initially gave it to the Ford driver, but video analysis showed that Larson got the win by just 0.001 of a second. That is officially the closest finish in Cup Series history since the introduction of electronic timing. One night earlier, Cam Waters had a steady run in his second Craftsman Truck Series start. He finished in 19th place, but had a heated chat on pit road afterwards with rival Lane Riggs, who finished 18th after the pair raced hard on the final lap. And this weekend marks NASCAR's annual throwback weekend at Darlington. Shane Van Gisbergen is among those getting into the retro spirit for the Xfinity race. His number 97 Chevy will carry the same colours that Marcus Ambrose drove to his first Cup Series win at Watkins Glen in 2011. This week on the Motorsport News Podcast, I'm chatting with Brock Feeney. The Red Bull Ampol Racing driver has had his strongest start to a season of his young supercars career, with three race wins putting him in second place, just behind teammate Will Brown in the standings after just three rounds. We talk about the challenge from within his own garage, extracurricular racing, just how did the team receive their hard battle for the win at Taupo? Brock, I guess we're about halfway into this four-week gap between Taupo and Wanneroo. What have you been up to in the gap between rounds?
Yeah, well, I was lucky enough to actually stay over in NZ for a week afterwards with my family. So we had a bit of a holiday, which was good. And considering how big the gaps are, it's good to try and shorten that up as much as possible. So I had a great time down in Queenstown for the week. Tried to switch off for a little bit. But then other than that, I suppose I've been sim racing. I've been in at the workshop and just training and waiting for the next one.
Did I see you just did the Wings for Life charity run as well through Red Bull?
I did that only a couple of days ago. So that's actually my first one. I think the last couple of years, it's always clashed sort of like the week before or when I'm away testing or something like that. So, yeah, I did it just over 24Ks, which is by far my furthest. So I am currently very sore at the moment, but... Yeah, it was really good. I had a great time. It started at 9 o'clock at night, so I didn't really know what to expect, but to go out, smash a few PBs and run my furthest distance. I am happy though that we still got a bit of time before Perth to recover.
Yeah, I can imagine. It's a wild concept, that Wings for Life charity run, on the basis, because the way, correct me if I'm wrong, but the way it works, isn't it, is that the event starts at the same time literally around the world, hence why you find yourself running at an otherwise unusual hour of the night.
Yeah, for sure. So, yeah, we started at 9 p.m, but obviously all around the world it's all different times. So it's very cool to be running at the same time. I think there was around 215,000 runners. So
wow.
I think it's the world's biggest running event that happens at the same time around the world. So it was very cool to be a part of. And the whole thing is that there's an imaginary car that catches you, and when it catches you, you're sort of out. So you sort of just got to keep running until you get caught. So it was a lot of fun. I've been getting into my running a little bit more, so it was good to. It was my first sort of competition of a run, like a big event. So it was good fun.
Very good. Well, let's look back briefly at the most recent supercars round at Taupo. Sunday was a very strong day for you, and a hell of a battle between yourself and Will Brown for the win. How was the team debrief back at Banyo afterwards? Did you boys get read the riot act for that hard battle on Sunday?
No, it was all good. I think we handled that pretty well, to be honest. I think the big thing was that we put on a great show for everyone. There's obviously times where you got to be pretty careful, but I think we got away with it as we should have. We raced clean, hard but fair, and we both walked away with the 1-2. So I think the biggest thing is always to never risk losing that 1-2 finish, but we're in the position that we had a gap, so we were allowed to to go for it. So it was good fun. Obviously, I'm probably not as happy as Will. I walked away second best, but it was great to put on a good show for everyone back in New Zealand.
Sure did put on a great show. And as several of your predecessors in those seats at Triple Eight have proven over the years, it is hard to temper enthusiasm with the team result.
Yeah, it is. But it's such a, you obviously focus so much on yourself, but it's such a great result for the team. We've had a really, really strong start to the year. And obviously, the position switched in the last part of the race, but for the team to have such a cool battle as well between me and Will. I mean, we've been so close this year, but we probably haven't had that on-track battle yet. So, look, I hope there's plenty more, and hopefully I can get the upper hand on him in a couple of them. But, it's been good fun.
You guys probably at Triple Eight had, I guess, the most consistency year on year from last year to this year with, I guess, Will being the key difference. How's he gone with fitting in with the team so far?
Yeah, no, it's been very smooth sailing, to be honest. I remember it's probably 8 months ago now when his name was sort of thrown around and then when we signed him, and not many people within the team knew him too well, but I sort of go back a while with Will, so I knew it was going to be a super easy transition for him, and he's getting along really well. He's super easy to get along with. I mean, you see what he's like on TV and everything, and around the track is a very easygoing guy and good to get along with. So, no, it's been good fun. I think everyone's enjoying him, having him in the team. And, the results are there for both of us.
How does he differ from your previous teammate, Shane Van Gisbergen?
He talks a lot more to the TV. obviously I get asked this a lot, and I had a great time with Shane, to be honest. We got along fantastic. He helped me out quite a bit in those first couple of years. But they're both super fast race car drivers. Obviously, Shane had been around for quite a supercar, so he's got such a big bank of knowledge. And I suppose me and Will are still trying to feed off that information. I know Will, when he got to the team, was loving digging into all Shane's old footage and data, because it's, you know, not something you get to do at another team. But it's been good. We, you know, I get along fantastic with both of those guys. It's been pretty smooth for Will so far.
The margin that you and Will have had over a lot, pretty much the rest of the field for most of the season so far, is that partly driven by you guys wanting similar things from the car in terms of setup, or are there some key areas where your driving styles differ a bit and you need something different?
Yeah, look, we're not identical all the time. There is certainly differences here and there, but look, we're only three rounds in, and all three tracks have been quite different in their own way. So I just think we had a good year last year. We didn't have, you know, certainly our best year on paper, but it was still a solid year. But I felt like we learned a lot of things last year, and we slowly chipped away, and we ended up in quite a strong spot towards the back end. But, you know, there's obviously some aerodynamic changes at the end of last year. Very minor, but I feel like we just rolled out with a really strong base car. We're not having to throw the toolbox at it yet, which has been good, but we're just two hungry young blokes that are, you know, trying to push the team forward as much as we can, and the team's done such a good job to give us the cars to be consistently up the front. But the biggest thing is, which I keep saying, is we can't let off the throttle, because everyone's right on us at the moment.
Indeed. In that sense, so with Will, 71 points ahead of you now, what are the things you're focusing on to try and reel him in?
Yeah. Actually, the one that's dropped us the most is that Saturday race in New Zealand, which was it wasn't great for either of us, but it wasn't a fantastic race on our side of the garage. But look, the big one's obviously limiting those days, but we know you're probably going to have them at some point, but it's just trying to maximise when you do have those days. I probably don't think we maximise what we could on that day, but he's been really fast at the moment. But the biggest thing is just focusing on ourselves, just doing what we can do best. To me, there's obviously little things that, you know, obviously he was a bit better at looking after his players in the last race there. So for me, I've been working pretty hard the last couple of weeks on focusing on how I can improve for the next one. So, there's a lot of little things that I'm always continuously working on, but that's, I suppose, no different to a normal race back and forth. But, we're just pushing on ourselves, keep working forward. And, it's been super close this year. I mean, every qualifying or race, we seem to be right next to each other. So I think we're going to be pretty close for the rest of the year by the looks of it.
It sure does seem that way. You touched on sim racing before and the various things you're doing to sort of improve your game. What do you do to keep your eye in with your driving, given the long gap between supercars rounds?
Yeah, there's not much this year. I mean, last year I raced the Asian GT Championship and a bit of the Oz GT. So I ended up doing 20 events last year, which was, it was pretty full on, but I really enjoyed it. This year, I don't really have anything else planned except for the supercars. So, I've been spending a fair bit of time sim racing, which has been good fun. I'm trying to get into it a little bit more. There's not a whole lot you can do in terms of driving unless, you know, get starts in other series. So, hopefully I'll try and, you know, snag a few GT drives here and there throughout the year, which will be good. But, I've just been doing some sim racing. I try and spend a bit of time out at Norwell still. So just trying to keep my eye in. But then I suppose other than that, it's trying to keep fit and just prepare for the next races.
So it's not you and Brody Kostecki out trying to become the world champion of Norwell?
We used to do that a couple of years ago when we were always out there together. I was working out there. He was out there a lot. So I haven't run into him out there yet, but I'm sure we will in the next coming weeks.
You mentioned you're not doing any more GT racing this year. I'm actually curious about the GT stuff you've done so far, because so much of it has been kind of off-Broadway in a sense, because it's been outside of Australia. I mean, you've raced in like GT World Challenger Asia takes you to places like Suzuka, Motegi, Sepang, Chang International Circuit in Thailand, where they're actually racing this weekend. Some pretty cool tracks right there. I mean, what's it like driving a GT car at Suzuka?
Yeah, pretty cool experience for me last year. I mean, there was a couple of rounds that clashed still last year, so I missed out on Mount Fuji, which would have been awesome. But to race at Suzuka and tracks like that, even Sepang, I grew up as a kid, you know, playing Formula One games, you know, probably nearly 10 years ago, or it would have been 10 years ago, driving at these tracks. So to finally get there and do it was sort of nearly like a bucket list to drive at these cool tracks. And it was a great opportunity that the team gave me last year to race the Asian GT program. So I had lots of fun. I had so much fun over there. Obviously I'd like to still do a bit more of that stuff, but it's still a juggle. Like, how much, obviously the more driving is better, but at the same time you don't want it to affect when you come back, which I don't think it did last year because the time zones are so close, but it was really cool. Hopefully I can get back and do some more.
I was going to say, because that turnaround is kind of what dissuaded you from doing the Indy 8-hour and the 24 hours of Spa with 888 this year, correct?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, to be honest, when you look at the Indy 8-hour, it's nearly impossible. You're racing, you're not going to finish the race till Monday morning Australia time, and that leads into Bathurst that week. I mean, we're already in Bathurst on Monday. So that one was pretty much a no-brainer. But then Spa was the one where it leads to Townsville. And as the pro driver, I was probably going to do a lot of hours in that race. And I just wanted to put my focus on supercars for this year. But that doesn't mean I don't want to do any races this year. Obviously, I do. But just timing and trying to make sure it lines up is definitely a priority.
We've seen a bunch of supercars drivers having a dip at NASCAR as well. Obviously, Shane, Cam Waters last weekend, Will's reportedly doing one too now. Is that something that interests you?
More racing interests me. You know, we're only doing 12 this year, so anything I can do more races, obviously, I'd love to do it. I think every Aussie's turned into a NASCAR fan probably the last 12 months when Shane went over, but it's been, really cool to see, you know, him. Brody was over there last year and now Cam having a crack at the Oval. So it's cool to see. Obviously, if the opportunity came up to do a race, obviously I'd love to do that, just to do some more racing. So it's been great to watch. Obviously, I'm watching it super closely cheering on Shane and trying to keep up to date with everything. So, it's been really good to see. And obviously Cam's keeping himself busy at the moment, which is good.
Just lastly, we did a story here at V8 Sleuth recently about all the other supercars teams and supercars you drove basically before you arrived at 888. I didn't realize you'd driven that Aussie Driver Search Falcon. Tell me about driving a supercar for the first time at age 15, at Morgan Park of all places.
Yeah, I know. Pretty crazy to drive a supercar there. And I didn't even get through, I think, the quarterfinals or something at that place. But anyway, it was pretty cool. I mean, to be a 15-year-old, I remember when the thing came out and I'm like, oh my God, I can win a drive in Super 2. Yeah. It was probably a little bit far-fetched at the time. But to drive, that was awesome. And then only a week or two later, Paul Morris got me out in his Super 3 car and gave me probably 20 or 30 laps for the day out there. So I feel like that was a real kickstarter. But it was, man, the first time driving a supercar is something else. It is an unreal car. And a tight track like Morgan Park, you probably don't really get to experience it in full. But to then obviously drive Paul's car at Queensland Raceway, it's crazy to think that I was only 15 at the time. It's gone super quick those last few years. But, such a great opportunity at a young age and for them to actually let me do it is pretty cool.
Thank you again to Brock Feeney for joining us on the Motorsport News Podcast this week. And before we go, a quick reminder, of course, to check out our teammates' shows here within our feed. Tomorrow, Peter and Luke Whitten from Rally Sport Magazine are back with a new episode of the Special Stage Rally Podcast. And of course, our other teammates, the Brad Jones Racing Rundown, featuring BJR General Manager Chris Westwood and the driver of the number 96 Pizza Hut Chevrolet Camaro, Macaulay Jones. They were back with a new episode last week to talk about Taupo. A race, of course, where BJR broke through for their first win of the Gen 3 era. But for now, I'm Will Dale, and I'll catch you next time on the Motorsport News Podcast.
Hey, it's Chaz Mostert here, and yes, I'm inside your speaker. I'm in here because I have a special message for you from Clayton in Melbourne. If you're a club, state, or national racer on the circuit or on the dirt in Speedway or rallying, you can now tap into the know-how of Walkinshaw Racing Services, and you don't need a supercar to get in the door. The same expertise that's won multiple Bathurst 1000s and V8 Supercar Championships is now available for you to call upon. From bonnet to bumper, WRS can help you with engines, design, paint, machining, fabrication, and so much more for all sorts of makes, models, and categories. Have a chat with Walkinshaw Racing Services and tell them what matters to you. Call now on 1300 W Racing or email services@walkinshawracing.com.au.